Welcome back to our second half of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm still Robert Winters, and that guy over there is still Patrick Barrett.
Mostly.
Yeah, for the most part, you know. So I'm just going to say one last thing just to sort of round out some of what we spoke about before is that, you know, with these the opportunity and the little sort of startup corrals, if you want to call them that, you know, the little wooden huts of like micro retail that was done there. I'm looking so forward to seeing that continue as a tradition. And if there's anything, if there's any great wish I wish we could have is that things like that could somehow also be incorporated into kind of brick and mortar future so that you could actually have things that felt like an arcade. You know, I mean, I know people love Graffiti Alley, but this part of me wishes to see an arcade worth of small retail along the alleyway, even in something like Graffiti Alley. But that's me.
The biggest challenge, Robert, has been just sort of parsing that mental block that people have for everything that we've been doing. I think that's where COVID silver lining gave us a slight opportunity to say, you know, we have to do these things or people are going to suffer even more. And, you know, I think we've proven ourselves. I really do. I think Michael, his team, the bid, all of us have really proved to the city and to the people around us that we can do these kinds of things without upsetting the natural course of, or whatever fears you had prior. You know, I think that's, and when we talk about this again as more permanent type interventions, we have data. We know what these stalls can do. You know, based on like on revenue streams, we know what Starlight can do. And I want Starlight to be permanent. I really do. I want to see a permanent arts pavilion behind there forever. You can go down two stories, put some more parking if that's what you're into, but build that. And Central Square, you know, I talked to Ken Reeves about this in a rare moment where he talked to me. And we both were like, you know, Central Square gonna have nice things too. And we didn't, you know, this is something, it doesn't always have to be affordable housing ad nauseum. You know, we need a place for our artists and for our culture. And if we don't build something permanent, we're gonna rely on private landlords, you know, like the Middle East who got, you know, Middle East and Cantab are gone. They're gone. Yeah.
A horrifying reality. Yeah. I mean, I listen, maybe some of these places can still, even still can rise like the phoenix from the ashes. We'll see. I don't know. I really don't know. But I do look forward to a day when creativity can flow, not based in the panic of an emergency, but just from the, you know, the creativity of now kind of war-hardened participants who kind of know how to get things done.
I'm going to use COVID-19 as a template for when we start looking for a new city manager. And I'm going to say, I'll send a friendly email. Hi, how are you? But here are the things we had to do during COVID. What would you have done? Because if I don't get a city manager that has the heart and guts of Louis DePasquale, then I'm not interested.
Yeah, I mean, I do fear, you know, I mean, they actually had a meeting this afternoon, sort of the very, very first, very preliminary meeting of the Government Operations Committee to talk about the process of finding a new city manager. And, you know, and honestly, the type of things that everybody focused on were incredibly deflating to me. You know, they focused on superficial things. I don't think, you know, some of the I mean, you know, much of what you know about how to work with the city manager and city government to actually get things done gets somehow lost in the discussion about whether Louis was a big fan of municipal broadband or not, right? You know, it's, I don't know, it's demoralizing.
The politicians don't know how to do it because they've never had to do it. They're hardwired to score political points. They're not hardwired to get things done. And in fact, it almost boosts their signal and gives them something more to talk about if their particular, you know, little issue isn't being addressed just the way they want it to be addressed. Municipal broadband is a big one, but we are talking about it in terms of a pandemic. And to me, you know, I think municipal broadband is a great idea. However, the time that we really dug into it, given that in understanding that this conversation has been ongoing, it just seemed incredibly superficial to me. I'm watching my friends go bankrupt I'm watching people suffer. I mean, I have relatives who, you know, passing away, and you're talking about municipal broadband. I'm like, well, I don't even care about that right now.
I mean, I think the one thing on the municipal broadband, because I certainly don't want to push that one too far, but you know, it does relate just to the issue of access to schools and things, yeah, which is a pretty serious matter. Let me say one last thing on the city manager front, which is that at this meeting this afternoon, you know, they sort of start, several of the councilors started talking about charter change. Mm-hmm. So I said, so what's up here now? Are we wanting to change a city manager? But we're going to simultaneously, oh, by the way, we're just going to throw out the structure of our city government as well from a city manager form of government. I thought, well, this is not an interesting way to go looking for a candidate for a job that you might just take away the next month, you know? And I'm perplexed.
And what kind of message does that send to potential candidates? I mean, I think if I was a potential manager candidate, I'd look at the July kerfuffle over a 2.5% raise. Were the council had just given themselves the same 2.5% raise?
Well, more than a few of them seem to, when this sort of conflating of the city manager issue and this charter change issue, like to drop the little bomb about shifting the balance of power, because it just seems to me, and I've been seeing this pattern develop over the last few months, you know, more and more, it's sort of like we have some elected officials who basically want to just snap their finger and pretend as though there isn't any management at all, and just sort of just they want to run the whole show. And I thought to myself, I'm sorry, even if you're some nice folks there, you don't know how to run a railroad.
If you have a policy order that ends in, and I really want to make sure that the manager follows the science, then you're probably a teenager, and you certainly have no business running anything, because the manager position is, I mean, just as it reads, it's a management position, and we're trying to weigh consequence, action, duty across a broad spectrum of people. The council, predominantly, for those who even know they exist, which based on voting, not many do, are activists primarily.
And well, Councilor Sabrina Wheeler, to today's meeting, flat out said that we're thinking of it all wrong if we think of the city manager as a manager. He's more of a political position. And I thought, boy, you've got that 100% wrong.
Couldn't be more backwards.
Right. You know, so, I mean, maybe I kind of understand what he was trying to say, but, you know, sometimes the words come, when they come out, maybe they speak the truth of what you're really thinking. And that's what came out.
In that particular council, all I see is a person who's hidden behind a Zoom screen for 365 days, hasn't set foot in Central Square, but for to come and get a photo op in front of the Daily Table, which he had nothing to do with. And at the same time, tries to float a policy order last night saying, yeah, you know, restaurants and businesses can take it on the chin for a few more months.
Throw them under the bus.
Let's close them all down, even though our infection rate is 0.43, even though our, what do we have for cases today? Was it two?
Now, not that anybody should read too much into the.
I'm cheating a little bit. So like, I apologize. But if you look at our 7-day average,
we're actually like, going to do that right now. Very, very quickly. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but the thing is that, you know, in spite, you know, though we did have this sort of like a strange little uptick that I still am kind of confused by. The numbers are again trending downward.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic because I know that vaccinations are on the way, and you know, there are plenty of other factors. I'm a little perplexed by the graph that Councillor Zondervan was pushing around there at the council meeting last night, where is part of his justification for wanting to basically, you know, shut it all down. You know, it seemed to me as though he was trying to make some connection between the city opening up in a very limited way and that somehow being the cause of various spikes.
Right.
I've kind of found that a little bit perplexing, because he somehow seemed to fail to notice that the resurgence corresponded precisely with
Thanksgiving.
And then the other resurgence corresponded precisely with Christmas. And this, quite honestly, was...
I think what you're saying, Robert, is that Santa Claus causes COVID, and I agree.
Well, You know, he may have, as you like to say, he may have two mathematics degrees, but I've got a few mathematics degrees. I also have this little award I got here when I was in junior high school for math too. So see, I can do the math as well.
There's a danger in a half information campaign, right? So like
a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
If you look across the entire spectrum, and I don't believe in his heart, he's coming from a terrible place, but you know, trying to use an infographic in that particular way to prove a point, when anybody who actually spends a hot second looking at it will realize that there's no point being proven. And he's actually kind of going against what he actually is making a statement on. Further, the CDC study that he kept on citing back to, if you read the back lines, it didn't look at restaurants that use spacing. It didn't look at restaurants indoor or versus outdoor. It didn't look at ventilation. And what have we been told? And this is a good segue into schools, that ventilation is the key. You get 4+ air exchanges in your space. No one's saying you're 100% safe. And I think that's another lesson that man needs to learn, is that there's no such thing as 100% safe, but this is demonstrably safer. But we also have no information as to what interventions are doing what. You know, did scrubbing your vegetables help? I don't know, probably not. Did keeping the parks closed and locking, you know, taking down all the basketball hoops to keep people from playing basketball or a good game of horse stop the COVID? I don't think so. But we didn't know, to some people's credit, to be fair, but now we do. We know a lot more. And you know, he asked the question, like, what's the difference between now and October? The difference is 4 vaccines, 67% of our at-risk population, at least with one dose of vaccine in them. Exponential growth in October, no growth right now. No, I mean, linear, maybe, certainly not exponential, but it's a vastly different universe. It just is. And I think some people are very comfortable acquiescing to say, you know, I'm not gonna do anything until, you know, this, it's 100% safe. And I feel like those people have been misled, because there's simply not going to be a moment in time where COVID doesn't exist. There'll always be some a bit of risk, but God bless every single bit ambassador. God bless every single person who came to.
And a special shout out, as Mayor Siddiqui gave, to my brother's keeper for helping facilitate vaccination of the ambassadors.
My brother's keeper, thank you. And you know, getting our guys vaccinated, I don't know what's happening to me, Robert. I get like emotional up and down. I can't really control it right now. But
well, see, you're actually in the business of actual human resources, and I don't mean that as an epithet for some jackass who works in some office, right? Because I have no love for people who work in human resources, and that's a whole story in and of itself.
And that's been an underlying theme as well, as like, you know, we all speak with our employees. We all keep close tabs with because they're our friends. Like, we don't, it's just not what's being advertised. And like, you know, at the Dial restaurant, which we opened up in a pandemic, holy crap. You know, I talk to my employees all the time about, do they feel safe? Do you want to do this? I read this study. What do you think? Like, there's an ongoing conversation. We work together to be safe together, to survive together, to create something together. That's what this is.
I can report firsthand, you know, the level of concern you had when people talk about shutdowns, how much concern you have to keep your employees working.
Yeah.
You know, to your undying credit.
You know, we have the new stimulus package, which is nice, but you know, the SBA still hasn't put together any kind of platform for restaurants. And it's, I mean, we're being told that, you know, by June we should see something. But think about it, Robert. We've been at that point, will have been closed for a year and a half in some places. And to have no relief for a year and a half? I mean, Joseph and Nabil, God damn it.
This is the Satyrs of the family from Middle East, yes.
I mean, that is astounding that we've let this happen to me.
If government means anything, right? You know, or I should say, if liberal government means anything, liberal government should find a way to get any of these entities like the Middle East that is survivable and to find a way for them to survive. Now, I don't know whether that's in the cards at this point, but the thing is, and let's not just include them. I mean, there are quite a few other entities as well, you know, so that we can be made whole. And not only that, but even if other entities were to come in and replace some of our tried and true friends, that in fact, good things come, and that the, you know, our, you know, liberal government, you know, lends the helping hand to guide these good futures into existence, you know, and I want to see that. I mean, I'm going to, you know,
I want to see it too, Robert. But what I don't want to see, and what I continually see, is that people who are looking for the shutdown to continue are saying, like, you know, the government should have done this, the government should have done that. And like these empty sloganeering nonsense that delivers nothing into the hands of the actual people that they're crushing. I mean, just infuriating. All the while, our kids have not been in school.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the schools, because, you know, the thing is that, and I'm sure this will be a topic of discussion as we head in through the summer, because simultaneous with all of the pros and cons and good decisions and bad decisions about remote learning, and is it effective or is it not effective? What are the roles of the teachers union playing here? We're also right now in the midst of seeking an interim school superintendent, and then eventually a quote permanent school superintendent, whatever permanent means these days, I don't even know. I'm not a parent, you are, you know, so you got a lot more skin in the game here than I do. So, you know, I mean, I know we've spoken at some points in the past about how do you feel about how COVID worked with the Cambridge public school system?
There are two kinds of people in the pandemic, Robert, people with small kids and people who don't have small kids. This has been the most challenging piece of the puzzle. My son is 7 years old. He was in first grade when the pandemic hit. He lost half his first grade year. When they closed down, they weren't ready for it. They didn't know what to do. And we had, you know, maybe 45 minutes of teacher time a week. We got about 40 pages a day, because I'm pretty sure there must have been some memo in CPS that says, make sure you send an email to the parents every day. Where I eventually just told my son's teacher, said, I love you dearly, but I'm not printing out 40 pages a day. And I don't know what this you expect to accomplish with it. And then, you know, coming into September, you know, the parents got their butts kicked job-wise, work-wise, everything-wise from March until school ended. And then the summertime was a time to take a breather. We didn't really prepare for September. And then when September came, we were shocked to find out we weren't going back. And the teachers union was, you know, firmly planted in the way of that, and a very, very weak school committee didn't really do much to push back until more recently, actually. You know, so I remember Superintendent Salim sent a video email to us all in April from his basement. It reminded me of the mission accomplished, you know, on the aircraft carrier, and saying, "Oh, we're getting it done." And I'm sitting there going, "You mother effer, like, we're not getting anything done. You made an 8-minute video."
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's like I'm sitting here. This is my classroom right here, right? My linear algebra books behind me. I can testify that you can make online learning and Zoom classes work for college students, maybe some high school age students, whatever. But I honestly can't really imagine any elementary school teacher being so phenomenally great as to make this work well for young kids.
And, you know, the follow the science people, which is a very weird expression, in my opinion, almost sounds religious, which
it does have a kind of a tone that way, doesn't it?
There's I like a restraining order between those two things. It's an evolving thing. And we know, you know, right now we've got, based on CDC, 510,000 people who passed away. It's a crushing number. From 0 to 29 years of age, that number is about 2,000 people. It tells you something about the risk of COVID. When you get up to 65 to 80, you know, and up, the risk, that's 80% of the entire deaths of COVID. And there are other things that happen in COVID that are not just death that are terrible, but it seems that we know what COVID likes to eat. which is why I was surprised that Chris Christie did so well. I figured,
figured he'd be the first one. Yeah.
Just like Dave Chappelle says, just gnaw him up. But, you know, the bigger issue is that keeping the younger kids out of school, which they've been predominantly done. My son was lucky enough to be chosen in October to go to in-person. But it, even the in-school in-person is not really in-person. You know, he has things called specials, which are, you know, language and gym and music, all done virtually in the classroom. So, you know, it's like they take a laptop, put it in front of you, and you're talking to somebody. So like, it's really not easy to learn a language that way for a seven-year-old. And then there's, you know, the kids who were not logging in last year.
The numbers I heard in the city of Boston were frightening.
They should be. They should scare the hell out of anybody.
And yeah,
what I think who they should scare the most out of are the teachers who are, you know, we're going back in the fall. There's no way we're not. And when we come back, we're all going to have to look at each other, and we're all going to have to try to get past the pain and the frustration. And we're also going to try to have to find 25% of kids who are not logging in.
Yeah. And
we're also going to try to find some way to move forward. But the obstacles going forward are massive. You know, Cambridge is supposed to go back to full in April as per the governor's order. You know, everyone says, well, why go back for 2 months? And I think, well, it's kind of like spring training for the fall. You know, we have to figure out how to do this because we have to do this. And for teachers, you know, I love my son's teacher now. She is just terrific. And I have a more productive dialogue with the teachers directly than I do in the unions in the way or the school committee. And quite frankly, I think both the union and the school committee own this disaster. Salim has decided to step down, which will be what we talk about this summertime in terms of a new superintendent. But the head of the union, Mr. Monahan, I like to see him be put into a space capsule. And I think that the school committee really needs to take a look at themselves to see what,
you know, I tune into city council more than is even healthy for me, but I do occasionally tune into the school committee, you know, maybe a subcommittee meeting, whatever. And I don't want to be mean about this, but I got to tell you, I have never in my life met a more egocentric group of individuals than those who serve on this school committee. They are more interested in coming across as somehow enlightened in some pathetic way than they are in just actually doing well and doing their jobs.
What I found fascinating is my son goes to school in person. There's about 10 kids in this class. Six of those kids, just about, are the children of epidemiologists, virologists, medical doctors, all the people who live in our neighborhood, are part of, you know, part of me. We are probably the most doctored per square foot place in the universe. And, you know, I look at that and say, well, if this person who's the head of epidemiology at such and such place is comfortable sending his son or daughter to school, well, then hell, I trust them. Follow the science, right? And yet here we are debating the most rudimentary things, like in 1918, the doctors then, they knew ventilation was the key. Okay. I look at what my son had in his room as a HEPA 650 filter that I use for demolding a basement. And I'm saying, that's not it. That's not ventilation, my friends. And the teacher puts it behind her desk. So I didn't even know airflow is going in, it's going right to her. I'm like,
that ain't an answer. Yeah.
But it took courage to push forward, and we didn't have it. You know, I think the only person I see right now actually giving a little bit of a kick is Fred Fantini and Monica Bowen, who, you know, I become a quiet fan of, but like the hour is late. And, you know, we already have a significant loss in enrollment now. We have a significant loss in enrollments coming up. What's the school gonna look like when we get back? And I think parents are, they're angry.
Really, no, I think maybe we're going to have kind of a post Rwanda moment of like a truth and reconciliation process. And
there's some parents who made remote learning work, but you know, you listen to a parent talking about remote learning. Oh, I could stay home from work and I could teach my son this and that. We had a great time discovering things. And you want to just bash your head against the wall and say, are you effing kidding me? Like, I'm glad that you were, you know, doing the work and having a, you know, enjoying your journey. But the rest of us are effed. So like, yeah. Shut your mouth.
Right. But, you know, listen, at some point vaccination will become, as we said, the more the rule than the exception.
It is.
Schools will be back. I hear even the universities are going to be back in regular session come fall. At least that's the plan, unless something else happens between now and then. Oh. I know summer school at Harvard, we're still doing it in Zoom, but that's actually in a way that works out because we have so many international students that it actually ends up being kind of a positive in some ways.
Remember, you know, everyone likes to take shots at Baker for doing, you know, and honestly, the rollout's been terrible. But we are currently sixth in the nation in terms of vaccine distribution.
You know, I tend to be somewhat forgiving. I'm not so forgiving of falsifying data in the state of New York having to do with nursing home deaths. But I have to say, I'm very forgiving of mayors and governors because nobody signed up for this job. And everybody had to kind of learn on the job, you know? So I'm very forgiving, and I'm forgiving of the governor as well.
Have we not learned anything about big medical rollouts online? I mean, remember when the Affordable Care Act came out and everyone's, you know, how many Saturday Night Live skits did we go watch? You know, we're just trying to log into the damn thing.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's sort of
like, we are not Switzerland, we are America. And America starts off by screwing up and then it gets really good.
But you know? Exactly right. Remember, like the Democrats had an online voting snafu in the primaries, and they're like, "Oh my, no, we hired a company that never did this before, and they made an app in 5 minutes. What could go wrong?" You're like, "Well, everything."
Seriously. Well, we only got about a half a minute left here. You know.
Thank you, Robert.
But I listen. I wish the school committee and the city council well in hiring the people that need to be hired.
I do too.
But honestly, I got to say it. If you guys screw up, some of us are going to ream you to death. So do well or else. So anyway, so I guess we're down to 10 seconds. So thank you, Patrick. Thank you. And I'm sure we'll have you back on again one of these days on Cambridge Inside Out. Thanks.